This is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Good morning, sports fans. It is a real privilege to have you here for the big, big Wednesday show. Ah, there she is. Isn't she beautiful? The Larry O'Brien Trophy. Standing there at center court at downtown LA and Staples Center. As we hear the voice of Lawrence Tanter, the public address announcer for the Los Angeles Lakers. As we see David Stern at center court next to the trophy along with Jeannie Buss on either side of the big championship emblem. What a night. We are currently having semi-live coverage of the Lakers championship presentation from the 2009 season. Underway now here on TNT as we record the podcast here for a beautiful, beautiful Wednesday. As we do this, it is currently Tuesday night. We currently see these 9 championship banners for the Lakers with plenty of room on the bottom row for more. And tonight, we are seeing the unveilment of one more of those trophies. This is just a beautiful day here to be a California guy, to be an LA fan, and a Laker fan to boot. Beautiful. We'll have Andrew Jacobson joining us shortly in the moment, but you know, there's just nothing more beautiful than seeing this arena, which was built 10 years ago, have its wonderful, wonderful trophy ceremony. And look who's in the tents tonight. Jerry West. This is awesome. This is fantastic. Ah, it's a shame I'm going to have to miss most that I'm not going to get to focus in on too much of this. But what a ceremony. The Lakers know how to get it done. All right, so we welcome you here in the city on a wonderful, wonderful Wednesday. I'm glad that you're having a good night. And we certainly hope that you have a chance to relax a little bit as we get into hump day. Lots to come here in the city, including a World Series preview with our friend Andrew Jacobson. And is it the end of the line for the top two in the SEC? That's all coming up right here in the city on Locks of the Week Radio. Ah, so, you know, sports is really nice to see on a month like this one. I mean, a lot of stuff is going on for once. And, you know, I mentioned in yesterday's podcast, you know, baseball is really, really missing its opportunity. I mean, they had their chance. Early October, late mid-October, I mean, that was their chance. It was not pretty dead during the middle of the week. They had nothing, and they blew it. Now you got a game that's starting in November. It's ridiculous. But that's what we have now with people just going after all the money. It's not fun. I mean, I used to remember going into, you know, November was about the time we started thinking about off-season acquisitions. And you would see off-season acquisitions about 2 weeks into November. Nowadays, it's like they don't even begin the off season until about 3 weeks into November. It's ridiculous. Absolutely crazy. So, you know, I've already said it. It's just too late. And, you know, baseball's kind of lost my interest in the whole World Series, but it's going to be a good series. So, we'll have that preview coming up in a little bit. Meanwhile, you know, we are in the midst of some really intriguing developments in college football coming up. But, you know, there's a few developments in the game that have really kind of fizzled. And that's one thing I hadn't really thought about going into this weekend. I had not considered, you know, the teams that didn't stay in the thick of things that we thought would. For instance, you've got Oklahoma, and their season really took a bit turn for the worse in the very first week of the season. Bradford wrecks his shoulder. He's out for a few weeks. And then Oklahoma just kills it. I mean, they play as well as they possibly could without the guy. But then when they play anybody competitive, it's a problem. And then Bradford finally comes back in the Red River game. And we said, okay, maybe they'll have a chance to beat Texas. And then Bradford ruins his shoulder again. It was like in the third quarter. Unbelievable. And so, I mean, we thought Oklahoma's season was basically over to begin with. But we thought maybe they had one good game in them. And they couldn't pull through. It's a shame, because if Bradford was healthy the whole time, it would have been just an incredible, incredible run. I mean, well, it would have been Yeah, it would have been an incredible run. I mean, Oklahoma could have had a real chance to get into the BCS championship game. What a bummer. Notre Dame. Everybody and their mother thought Notre Dame was going to be this amazing team, that they were going to make this run to a BCS bowl. Well, now I think the cream has really risen to the top, and Notre Dame ain't it. Notre Dame is such a wreck right now. They have terrible defense. They can't put anybody away. And honestly, the fact that they came back against USC a while ago, I think that was just more of a byproduct of them really just of the rivalry more than anything. I mean, what a joke for the Notre Dame. Jeez, I knew not to buy into the hype. Lou Holtz was off his rocker when he said that they were going to go undefeated and go to the championship. Beano Cook, obviously, was a homer. We knew that not to listen to him. I mean, I think we all know at the end, you know, most of us, the reasonable people were right on this one. Notre Dame, what a joke. Bunch of chucks. Incredible. Another interesting story, although a lesser one, obviously. The fact that UCLA was supposed to be the new powerhouse in LA, remember that big ad, the football monopoly is over? Well, it looks like UCLA stopped playing Monopoly and decided to play Sorry instead. Man, do they suck. They couldn't even beat Arizona last week. Now they're 3-4 after everybody was screaming from the rooftops, well, look, we're the only undefeated team in Los Angeles. Yeah, you didn't play anybody yet. Finally, you play some Pac-10 teams, you're 0-4 against the Pac-10. Ridiculous. So that's UCLA, another disappointment in college football. And finally, and when you talk about disappointments, you think about teams like Ohio State. Ohio friggin' State. Once again, they've just completely combusted. And when they got exposed, and it wasn't even like to a good team. I mean, they lost to USC, which was one thing, but then that second loss that they had, what was it, to Iowa? No, I forget who it was. But it was insane what they've been through this season. And so at least the good thing about it is that we don't have to worry about them ruining any of the BCS bowls this year. I guess that's the good thing about it. So there's that. Penn State, a loss early on to Iowa. Iowa still hasn't lost a game yet, but they'll be down the tank soon. So that's the disappointments in college football this season. So now the teams that are in this thing have a very interesting case. It's as wide open as it's ever been in college football. We'll get into that coming up shortly. But first, Andrew Jacobson will be joining us on the other half of the break, on the other side of the break, to bring in and usher in the World Series, Yankees versus the Phillies. It's going to be a barn burner, folks. So we'll get into that right after this. This is Dave in the City.
I wasn't going to school because I was just making money stealing cars.
Well, I was 10 when I first got involved with drugs. I skipped school because, you know, nobody cared.
When I first got pregnant, school was not important to me, so I dropped out.
I just thought the only way I can make something out of my life is that if I get an education.
I still need to go to school to make it for myself.
Stay in school. Give yourself a chance.
I think I'm happier now. I know I'm happier now.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Back at it here in the city on Locks of the Week Radio. You know, all that Lakers stuff, commotion going on. And one Andrew Jacobson who's seated next to me was not particularly fond.
Makes me sick to my stomach, Dave. Sick to my stomach. Number one, that basketball season's starting. And number I've got to watch the Lakers go out and like the assistant athletic trainer, you know, the front door secretary, I have to watch them go and pick up their rings. It's... drives me crazy. I was sick like 2 weeks ago. I feel sick again.
Man, wow. You take this stuff hard. I mean, anyway.
Let's not talk about the NBA. I don't want to talk about it.
Good to have you back here.
Thank you, sir.
I hope that you you had a good week. I understand you were at a U2 concert on Sunday.
Yeah, I went to a U2 concert. First time ever to a U2 concert.
And how'd it go? Like, what was it like? What did they play? All the like the good songs? Did they play all the old stuff, the new stuff?
Yeah, old stuff, new stuff, good stuff, mediocre stuff. You know, well, they played a few songs that I wasn't huge fans of, but still, you know, for you too, it was a great show. 100,000 people was at the Rose Bowl. So I mean, I had never been in a crowd that big before. Have you ever been to? Do you ever been into anything that was 100,000 people?
Well, yeah, I think that when I went to, well, the closest I've been to something like that were two occasions. One was when I went to a World Cup game at the Rose Bowl. Was so same venue, but and the other was when I was at the UCLA game just a few weeks ago. That's well, close, let although
me,
not really.
Let
close.
Me just say there were not 100,000 people at a UCLA game a few weeks ago. Oh my gosh, you might have been in a stadium that sits 100,000 people, but there most definitely was not 100,000 people there at a UCLA game. There might have been. What do you get at a UCLA game? You get maybe 50, 60, maybe. Was it half full, three quarters? What do you think?
I would say it was about anywhere from, like, yeah, I would say 60% at least. I would say it was a pretty good crowd. Right. I mean, so K-State maybe had a good, some good fans, and it wasn't bad. I mean, it was certainly a lot more than there were, like, 2 weeks later against Cal, where there was, like, nobody there.
It was probably about 60.
I would say 60, good 60,000.
Yeah, maybe. Somewhere
I
around there.
I didn't check the actual official attendance. Actually, I could find that out. So we'll do that in a minute. But
find that out. I want to know.
Let's transition into the World Series a little bit.
All right, fine. I wasn't done talking about YouTube, but let's go.
Oh, no, no, no.
No, 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 no. Go ahead. No, 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 no.
Well, YouTube is a little bit more interesting to me than the World Series right now. It's just kind of.
Well, yeah, the YouTube concert was great. Showed up early. Took the shuttle into the stadium. I was getting emails from the place I bought the tickets, you know, months ago, saying, oh, you got to get parking. You got to get parking in advance. Parking's a nightmare. You don't want to park at the stadium. So, of course, I get a shuttle. And I think out of the 100,000 people there, I think 90,000 took the shuttle. You should have seen the shuttle line. It had to be like one of the longest lines I've ever stood in my life. You know, it was crazy. It just wouldn't end. We were walking to the back of the line. This is to get on the shuttle. You
Good
know?
Lord, really?
Yeah, I should have just parked at the stadium. So, of course, what made that kind of fun is we drank the whole time we were in the line for the shuttle. So by the time I actually got on the shuttle, I was quite buzzed. And then we got over to the stadium, hung out at the – got there early. So we hung out like the – they had like tents set up and they had all this stuff and they were selling tacos and pizza and popcorn. They had all this food stuff they were doing. They had TV set up. People were watching football games. Mm-hmm. We went out there just we were kind of hanging out and stuff. And then, yeah, went into this concert, saw the Black Eyed Peas. Your favorite band, right?
Oh, man, I love the Black Eyed Peas.
Don't tell people that, Dave. So we did that at first, and then U2 came on around 9 and saw the show from there.
That was pretty good. That was just a nice, well-packed night. I mean, I'm sure it was worth every penny, I would imagine, right?
Well, yeah, I guess. It's $100 a ticket, and I had to buy two.
Oh my goodness.
When you have a girlfriend.
Yeah.
So, it was certainly seeing a U2 concert. If you're a U2 fan, and I'm a U2 fan. Mm-hmm. I don't know all their songs, but I know a great deal of them, and I very much enjoy the band. And it's one of the classic bands out there right now. I mean, U2's probably, in terms of bands and shows and acts, I mean, I would think they're like at the highest, or maybe right near the highest. They've got to be like top two or three.
Well, I guess in terms of revenue, yeah, I would think so. I mean, they're huge. I mean, everybody goes to these concerts. I mean, that's a big tour.
They'll go to any country, sell out a huge stadium.
Yep.
So, and it was pretty crazy being there in an environment with 100,000 people. But yeah, it was a ton of fun, and you can cross that. It's like seeing like a concert like that. It's like one of those like life list kind of thing.
Yeah.
So you can cross that one off, done that, and they're going to be at Anaheim in June of next year, and so I'll probably be at that one as well.
You're really going to the Anaheim game one? Seriously?
Yeah, I think I'll go to the Anaheim one.
But I mean, isn't it going to be like another $200 to go to that game?
Well, it's not a game. And number two, there was no athletic events going on at the U2 concert.
No scoring?
Unless there's plenty of scoring going on.
Yeah,
probably a little bit of scoring. What a crowd, too. You have a lot of young people. You got older people. It's such a dichotomy of people who are at these YouTube things. You know, it's kind of crazy to see that, too. But, yeah, we're going to go to the Anaheim one. Do it again.
Wow.
Get floor seats this time.
Oh, that's unbelievable.
Yeah,
that'd
that's
be just
right.
incredible.
Oh, absolutely.
Can we do a podcast direct from the site?
I want to do one right before the concert. You know, they had a half hour between the Black Eyed Peas and U2 when they went on stage. Almost more than a half hour. I was absolutely bored out of my mind. You know, Black Eyed Peas are up there playing music and stuff. They're done. And I'm thinking, like, awesome. Now the real show begins. Right now, this is it. You know, I'm geared up. I'm excited. Yeah. I know there's going to be a little stoppage, but like a half hour is like almost like 40 minutes. It's like between 30 and 40. I have nothing. I'm sitting there. I'm just, you know, just hanging out.
Just sitting there, people. Nothing happening.
Didn't have a drink
Didn't
in my
they
hand.
At least put the game on, or like put like the baseball game on the TV or anything.
Nothing. Just sat
wow.
there. You know, and they play like music over the speakers and. I don't know, but oh my gosh, that was kind of a downer. You know, you're all geared up, you're excited, you're like, yeah, concert, all right. And then, like, the first thing goes down, and then you're like, all right, let's go, next thing, you know. And then it was like 30, 40 minutes of just sitting there.
You know what that reminds me of? Reminds me of the freaking layoff between series and the baseball postseason. It's the same thing. It's like you're at all this, you're like, all right, division series. And then you're like waiting there for a week.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, imagine doing that sitting in Yankee Stadium.
Oh, that'd be terrible.
By yourself for 3 days.
And it's like 2 degrees outside and it's windy.
Well,
oh,
it was nice. I'm glad it wasn't windy like it is tonight.
A very blustery day as we record the program tonight.
Yeah, and we might lose power during the middle of the show.
There's signs. We'll see. All right, so let's get into this a little bit. Number one. 67,311 people at that UCLA game I was at the other day.
Wow, good crowd.
That was a good crowd. See, I felt it was a good crowd when I was there. It was a good crowd.
And you were one of those people.
See, without me, it'd be 67,310.
That's right.
All right. So we have, the World Series is starting tonight. So the Phillies are playing the Yankees. Phillies defending world champions. And Phillies doing something, a page out of the Yankee playbook.
Are the Phillies the defending world champions?
Absolutely.
I didn't see any of the World Series last year. I don't know. Who won?
Who won? I don't know who won, but I know who lost. The fans. It was five games. Terrible series.
That's the thing. It's this year, I'm actually looking forward to this World Series. Even though we're almost into November, and baseball should have been over a long time ago, I will say that I'm looking forward to this World Series. I don't think it's going to be a classic World Series. I don't think we're going to see some kind of great show. Maybe, but who knows? You know, but I hope so, certainly. But I just, in general, I think it's going to be a fun series to watch. Certainly the potential there is for some good offensive baseball.
Yeah, since 2002, only one World Series has gone more than five games, and even that one wasn't really good. That was the 2006 series, Cardinals and Tigers. You know, I've been thinking about this. We talked about layoff. We talked about downtime. Do you think this extended downtime between the championship series and the World Series lends into the fact that they are so lopsided? Like the fact that there's no momentum?
Well, I certainly think that there's a little bit of an issue there. And I don't know how it gets solved. They schedule these things when they schedule these things. I guess the network holds the leagues to it. Certainly, when was the Phillies? The Phillies last played, was it last Tuesday? Wednesday?
I think it was last, I'm trying to think, I want to say Wednesday.
Wednesday.
It had to be Wednesday, because so that was game five. It's been exactly 1 week for the Phils.
Okay.
That's a long time to be. Could you imagine if the Yankees, like, blew them out in the series after all that momentum that the Phillies picked up?
Yeah. And then for the Yankees, now they played on Sunday night, so they basically got 2 days off. They get Monday and Tuesday, so that works pretty well for the Yankees.
Yeah.
You know. So, I don't know. I think I would like a little momentum. I think if you're playing well, you're going well, you want to keep playing. You know, it's one of those things, it's like in football, you know, where they say your bye week comes kind of at a bad time or something, or an off week. Your team's playing well, you're feeling good, you're playing hot, you know, and then all of a sudden, boom, you just get a break. That could be a little jarring, particularly with baseball, where a lot of baseball is timing, you know, in hitting and doing a lot of those types of things. Timing can be such an issue with baseball. Yeah, getting a little bit of a break. This is certainly the longest break the Phillies have had since, you know, even before the season started. So could have a little bit of a factor, maybe, but even then, I think it would be slight. I don't think anything like that really determines the outcome of a series.
And as a matter of fact, last year, it was the Phillies who had the long layoff, And they wound up winning the World Series in five games anyway. I mean, the Tampa Bay Rays went seven games against the Red Sox. You'd think, oh, well, they have the momentum. They got the home field advantage. And what happens? They lose in five. So, it, you know, honestly, the layoff may not factor in. So that's one side, like, against the concept of layoffs.
And I think that part of that could be that if you get stretched into, like, a six or a seven-game series, it's a little taxing on you, maybe mentally, you know, or whatever, you know, maybe probably not physically, but at least mentally can be a little bit taxing on you. Whereas if you kind of breeze by, blow out a team like the Phillies did to the Dodgers, you know, it's much easier at that point. You know, it's like a breeze. It's like, oh, the Dodgers suck. That was easy. Bring on a challenge. Come on, please.
Go Yankees. Please end this. Yanks, I don't even care if you win 27. Win 37. Just get rid of the Phillies. I'm done. I'm done with this team. You know, and but having said that, this is going to be the last championship round for the Phillies in, like, the next 35 years. Trust me on this one. They ain't coming close. They aren't even going to make the playoffs next year. Trust me on this one.
Well, it's pretty crazy that in baseball, here we are again with the Phillies in the World Series.
Yep.
I mean, that is a pretty crazy feat to get to two World Series in a row. And you have to give them their props. I don't think they're going to win the World Series this year, but I got to give them their props for at least getting there 2 years in a row. Won it last year. It's quite a run to do it.
And I have to say, they've been very impressive in both instances because, you know, I keep talking about how the offense keeps getting all the breaks. Personally, I think the offense is just pretty good. I mean, the offense is phenomenal. All the runs they've scored in the postseason the last few years, you know, after a while, you just got to say, you know what, maybe this is a good offense. I've said this already. But if they make a good run against the Yankees, if they make it interesting, if they beat the Yankees even, wow. I mean, that you have to say that the Phillies are one of the great all-time teams. Maybe because there's been so much parity this decade in baseball, possibly the best team of the decade. In terms of offense, only offensively, but not defense.
Yeah.
And their pitching is terrible, actually.
It would be interesting. I don't know how they would stack up, and we'll see how they do.
I'm just talking about lineup personally, yeah.
But it's a great offensive lineup, and that's where I think that this series becomes very interesting. You got guys like Howard and Utley, and mm-hmm. I know you love the Flying Hawaiian Victorino.
Well, I got to give him credit, though. I mean, he's very aggressive, and I think that's the thing that makes him work for that team.
Rollins is good. He's not as good as he was a few years ago, but he's still pretty good. You know, the Phillies got some guys on their team. They got some guys that can certainly put a charge into the ball and create some good offense. And obviously, the Yankees have that as well. When you look at A-Rod, Teixeira, Jeter, you know, all the guys that they've got on their team as well. You know, so there certainly is the potential for some pretty good offensive baseball, which will be great because I really don't think World Series games are long enough. I think we should have longer World Series games. So I'm all down for offensive, you know, outputs that will rival some bad football games. But let's see.
Well, yeah, let's see indeed. Now, so, you know, you, interesting point you made about the lineups. You're talking about two lineups that are very similar. You have both teams have very big power bats towards the middle and the top of the lineup. Yankees have Teixeira, they have A-Rod, and they have, let's see, who's their third guy? Well, they don't need a third guy. Those two guys are really good. And then, obviously, the Phillies have Howard. They have, to a lesser extent, Utley. They certainly have got Worth and Raul Ibanez, who had hit a bunch of home runs this season. So, but at the same time, both teams have little scrappy hitters, which work out pretty well, too. Jorge Posada's not really scrappy, but he can definitely get the job done. Melky Cabrera, very aggressive at the plate. Then on the other side, Carlos Ruiz, who's been just amazing in the postseason. We already talked about Victorino. And Pedro Feliz, I mean, no, he's not fantastic, but he's very, he can get on base. He can get some base hits.
Yeah, offense could be the name of the game in this series. Outside of games, well, it's going to be interesting to see how the pitching matchups work in this series. Lee versus Sabathia is going to be in game one, which is interesting just for the sense that here you've got two guys who used to be teammates together in Cleveland. That organization's a mess, and now they're on separate teams and facing each other in game one of the World Series. Lee comes over from the American League to the National League and dominates, and now it's going to be interesting to see him go back and pitch against the Yankees, which he has done in the American League. So they're very familiar with him. And obviously the Phillies are familiar with Sabathia from last year in the playoffs. And they actually did a pretty good number on him in Milwaukee. So both these lineups have successes or success, have had success, I should say, against these pitchers in the past. They've been pitching, they've both been pitching very well in the postseason. So it really creates quite an interesting game one matchup. And then for the Yankees, how are they going to do their rotation the rest of the series? Are they going to go with a three-man rotation, which then means will Sabathia pitch in game four and then Lee comes back in game five? Or, you know, how does that work in terms of the rest of the series? And that should be very interesting. And then past, of course, those two, the teams in terms of pitching becomes very questionable. Pettit's very good, but I think the Phillies are going to start Pedro Martinez in game two, which obviously Pedro against the Yankees, he was against with Boston for years. So that's going to be kind of an interesting little deal to see how Pedro comes back and faces the Yankees. And then, yeah, game three, you're going to have probably Burnett or, you know, I'm not sure how the how this series is going to shape up with the Phillies. It's always a big question mark to see where things go. I think Hamels will be in game three for them, and he's pitched really poorly in the postseason. But, you know, so that's going to be kind of an interesting matchup, and we'll just kind of have to see how that all kind of sorts out.
You know, this is – I'm going to ask you about Pedro for a little bit. Why would you start Pedro Martinez in game two knowing that you had a guy like Hap who's probably got much more upside?
Well, I think you start Pedro because you feel like he's been there before. He's familiar with the Yankees and that environment and that kind of a big game. Obviously, with the Red Sox and Yankees, they played tons of big games there for a number of years. So, you know, Pedro is going to be very familiar with that environment and won't be intimidated by it, whereas maybe you throw a Hap in there who's pretty young. Maybe that's a little bit more intimidating. You don't throw Hamels because, really, Hamels, as much as I like to say, he's the guy who can determine this thing. You know, depending upon how he pitches, he's been very average, you know, recently. Is he really a number two guy, Hamels? I mean, he, I don't think he's made it past the fifth or sixth inning in any postseason game he's pitched in, you know. So he's been tremendously average. And so I think Pedro is an interesting choice. Certainly, it could backfire, no question about it, when a guy's that old and you know, who knows. But we'll just kind of have to wait and see how that plays out.
You know, I think that just goes to show that the Phillies' rotation is terrible. I mean, you know what? I don't know what you make. I mean, you know what I make of this? When you look at what happened to the NL, what happened in the NLCS, you know, the more I think about it, the Dodgers choked. I mean, you really, the more you think about this Phillies' entire pitching staff, the less you are impressed with it. Lee is fantastic. Everybody else, who knows? It's like none of these guys are good. Hamels can't get through past the fourth inning, even against the Dodgers. I mean, we mentioned Hap, we mentioned Pedro, who had just the game of his life, apparently, some miracle game in game two of the LCS. He's not that good. He's old. I don't really follow how he... It's kind of like when you roll Vincent Entepadia in a closeout game. It doesn't work. He's just too old. And that bullpen is ridiculous. And Lidge cannot get through the ninth inning without getting at least one guy on base. It's nuts.
Wow. So let me guess, you're picking the Phillies in the series?
Is that what you're saying?
Well, let me tell you this. The Yankees' rotation has really come to roost. And I think the one thing about this, both teams, Andrew, is that the Yankees throughout the year have shown that their pitching is really a lot better than we gave them credit for, and it should be, because, you know, CC Sabathia is definitely pitching as well as he should be for once, and especially in the postseason he's been very good. And obviously Burnett, not great, but good enough to become a good, solid number two starter for that team. And their bullpen, this is where the Yankees are going to pull away. Their bullpen is very, very good. Anybody you throw out there is pretty decent. Phil Koch is good. I think I like what I see from Jabba Chamberlain when he comes in the seventh inning. Phil Hughes has been pretty decent. And then obviously Mariano Rivera, their rock. He can pitch two innings. He can pitch one inning, one and a half. It doesn't matter.
Well, I think, you know, to a point, let's go back to the Phillies. Did the Dodgers choke in that series?
No. Yes.
The Dodgers did not choke.
Oh,
the Phillies
beat
them in five games.
Oh, no, here we go.
It was not a very competitive series. Some of the games
choked.
Were close. But some of them weren't even close. I mean,
you don't think that's effective?
Hey, come on, man.
They kind of choked it. I mean, if they didn't even show up, I mean, none of these guys, they had the best ERA in Major League Baseball. And then just like they did last year, they give up all these runs to the Phillies. Or all of a sudden, did they reverse the trends of time? Did they bend the time-space continuum? I think they choked.
No, it wasn't a choke job. It's a choke job if a team gets like a lead, if, you know, and then blows it. Like the Yankees
did that too,
like the Yankees did with the Red Sox a number of years ago. They had this huge lead and then choked it away. That's a choke job, no question about it. Or if it's a more competitive series and some of the games are closer. A few of those games were pretty close, L.A. and Philly. Three of them, you could say, were close. Game two.
Yep.
Game
one turned out to be close. Game two was close, but they won.
Game two was close. And then the game where Broxton blew it, which was four, I think.
Four.
That is
out of five games. So that's more than half of the games.
Game one wasn't that competitive. I mean, game one was close, but let's not pretend that the Dodgers should have won game one. They shouldn't have won game one. So really, two games in that whole series were close, you know, realistically, in which the Dodgers had an opportunity to win, and they won half of those. They won one, and they lost one. That's not a choke job. You got beat. You got schooled by a better team. Not a choke job.
All right. You know, be
you
that
just don't
as
like
me.
Philly.
I don't.
Two, the Yankees' rotation is pretty good. But let's not forget, they use a three-man rotation in the ALCS. They obviously don't have a fourth starter or somebody on that team, and not a lot of teams do, which they can really feel like is very dependable. It works better if Jabba Chamberlain's in the bullpen, and they just go with Sabathia, Burnett, and Pettit. They feel like that works better rather than doing a full rotation in these playoff series, which is fine because in a seven-game series, especially a World Series, we're going to have randomly stupid days off. It works. But let's not pretend like the Yankees have some great pitching staff. Sabathia is very good. Past that, Pettit's very good in the playoffs, you know, but is he certainly a guy you can beat? I think so. And I think Burnett's a wild card. You don't know what you really get from him. Now, their bullpen's better than the Phillies.
That's the major difference.
You got to say, the Phillies' bullpen, not too bad. Outside of game two where they blew it, they didn't do a bad job against the Dodgers.
In fact,
the Dodgers' bullpen
true.
Was a lot worse than the Phillies' bullpen.
I think they choked, personally, the Dodger bullpen. But yes, you know, the interesting point about the Phillies' bullpen. Everybody had to rode them all year. Oh, you suck. Your bullpen sucks. Your bullpen's a joke. You know what they did in the playoffs? They kept the Phillies in these games. I mean, honestly, they did a pretty good job. Their middle relief in particular. I thought it was very good. I liked what I saw from Ear. I liked what I saw from Madsen. Madsen was terrific during the LCS. I really thought that was a very much unheralded part of that run that they had. Their bullpen was actually not that bad.
Lidge pitched a lot better.
Lidge pitched better.
Now, that
he still
doesn't mean,
sucks.
That doesn't mean
better.
that they'll be great in the World Series, but, you know, they generally bullpens are going to pitch a little bit better in the playoffs. That doesn't mean all the time it's going to happen, but generally you're going to go with matchups. You're going to do things with your bullpen that you wouldn't maybe do in the regular season, and a lot of times if it's handled well by a manager, you know, you can hide a lot of your weaknesses out there.
You know what, though? I have to say, this is the first offense that's played the Yankees in the postseason so far that is really either their equal or superior. I think this is the best offense that they've faced the entire month.
Well, I don't think it's a superior offense because I think when you look at the Yankees, particularly the way A-Rod's been hitting, I think certainly that is a very, very good offense, particularly, like I said, when A-Rod's hitting like he is. At the same time, yes, I think the Phillies, Ryan Howard's also played very well during the playoffs here in this stretch. So, you know, that's why I think it has potential to be a good series. I really think, like, it could be competitive, and both these teams can, you know, hit you quick. Three runs just like that, you know, and not a lot of teams. The Angels can't really do that, you know. The Dodgers couldn't do that, you know. This works well in that these teams, you know, when you're down by three or four runs, you're not necessarily out of it yet in this game. Now, in the series as a whole, you know, I think the Yankees are going to win. That's my prediction. I think the Yankees will win, as I think most people will believe that. And I think it will probably – five seems a little too few. I think Philly's got a little bit more in them than that. I don't think they have enough for seven.
So I'll go the conservative six route and say Yankees in six.
Well, you know, it's kind of hard to argue with that. I think the Yanks are pretty good. I do think the Phillies are going to be good for at least one win. I don't know. I mean, I want this to go six. It would just be a relief for me to see this one competitive World Series. I want it to go seven. For once. Well, seven games. Wow. At Yankee Stadium, seven, game seven.
The problem
have
is...
they ever played? When was the last time they played a game seven at Yankee Stadium? This is an interesting question. Because I don't know if they have. It's been a while, anyway. Well,
the American League, they have. Championship.
No. I mean the World Series. I mean, the American League, they've done it a couple times. But I'm wondering if they've done a Game 7 World Series at Yankee Stadium in a while. Thinking maybe 1978 against the Dodgers, but I think that went six. But well, I'll have to double check that.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I now know what Dave's going to do during the break.
Yeah.
Jump on the computer. I hope there's a Game 7. But I don't know. My problem is Lee versus Sabathia and that matchup. Because I think Lee is good enough to win games. I don't know if he's good enough to win games against Sabathia. I think Sabathia can beat Lee in a head-to-head matchup. And I think by virtue of that, that's where Philadelphia gives away games. It'd almost be one of those things where if you're Philly, why not Sabathia pitch on the first game one? Why not throw him out there game two? Let him pitch game two. And that way you have a distinct advantage in game two. Whereas you might not have it in game one. It's a weird strategy. It's certainly a questionable one, and this, by all means, might not a baseball manager. But, you know, I think Sabathia versus Lee, wouldn't you give the advantage to Sabathia?
Yeah, I'd have to. He's a much bigger workhorse. Yeah. He's more experienced than Cliff Lee. And, yeah. You know, although I have to say, remember the two of these pitchers faced off against each other on opening day at Yankee Stadium? Well, the home opening day for the Yankees. First ever game at New Yankee Stadium. And I remember the Indians tore up the Yankees that day.
Yeah, Sabathia had
that
a rough,
terrible day.
Rough start. At Yankee Stadium. He's a much different pitcher now. I think he's more comfortable. It'll be very interesting. I'm looking forward to the World Series, like I said. I didn't really watch hardly any of it last year. Literally, maybe two or three minutes. But this year, I'm certainly going to be tuned in tomorrow night at some point.
Indeed. All right. So, you know what?
If it doesn't rain out.
That's a good... good conclusion. Who will I be rooting for in the series? I will be rooting for rain. So that will be my thing.
Dave's rooting for snow, actually.
I would like all the games to be postponed. Every single one. Game 1 through 7 postponed at some point during the series. The final game will be played in Christmas.
Well, last year they had the game where it was postponed in the middle of the game, and then they finished the game next day, right?
They did.
That happened last year.
And there's a new rule in place, by the way.
That would be cool, by the way. I would like every game to see that way. Let's
well,
play
there
every
is,
game, two-day game.
There is one thing that makes this interesting. One reason why that worked out so well is because the final three innings of the game were played so early that the East Coast got to see the end of the game easily. So, with that said, I understand that Major League Baseball has decided to shift all the start times for the games 1 hour earlier. Now they're starting at 7 instead of 8 o'clock. That's fantastic. That is fantastic news, isn't it?
Well, they're not starting at 7 o'clock. They're starting at 8 o'clock.
Let me double check that.
Sorry to ruin your day, Dave, but the news is not as fantastic as you had hoped it to be.
Maybe it was like I thought it was going to be
last
an early
year.
Start.
I think World Series games began at 5:45, and
oh,
this year they're,
there you go,
5:45 West Coast
okay,
time.
Okay.
This year they will be starting at 5, pretty much like 5 o'clock, 7:57.
Yeah, 7:57 Eastern time. And actually, so ultimately, it was true that it was an hour earlier, but not as early as I thought. So
it's almost an hour early. That's about 50 minutes earlier, which is
that's
significant.
A big difference, though. I think that's going to be good for ratings.
In World Series playoff baseball, 40 minutes, 50 minutes is about an inning and a half.
But I think it's a significant difference. And instead of games ending at like 1 o'clock in the morning, they end at like 12:30. That's not bad.
Yeah.
That's not bad. All right, so we'll take a break.
Still
here in the
late
city. It's going to be a good series. I don't know if I can get into it, but, you know, maybe if I don't, Andrew can fill me in. Take a break here in the city. When we return...
That was a long segment.
It is, and it is the end of the line for for the baseball discussion. But is it going to be the end of the line for the SEC's top two? Stay tuned. You won't want to miss this. This is Dave in the City.
Baby, you can drive my car. And maybe I love you. Hi, Shaquille O'Neal for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. When you celebrate this holiday season, remember that life is very precious. If you're going to party, just plan ahead. Don't drink and drive. I repeat, do not drink and drive. And promise to designate a driver before you celebrate.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back in the city. I'm Dave Medina, and this is Andrew Jacobson by my side co-hosting today.
Hello, everybody.
Very, very, very interesting, very exciting day for a lot of people for a lot of reasons. But, you know, it's similarly exciting for the SEC as we get down to the home stretch here for college football season. Now, just a quick update on the rankings. The BCS standings go like this. Florida and Alabama, top two, 1-2. Texas is 3, rightfully so, at 7-0. Iowa is still undefeated, so they're number 4, and I think I completely disagree with that, by the way. Just because you're undefeated doesn't mean you should be number 4. I'm sorry.
Well, that's the
I
old.
I don't care.
But wait
about
a
that.
Second. That's the old thing of, are we doing polls based upon where people deserve to be ranked based upon their records, or are we doing polls based upon how good we actually think these teams are? Because if we're doing it based upon their records and all that kind of stuff, then Iowa number 4 makes sense. But if we're going to do it on who we really truly feel is the fourth best team in the country, then Iowa probably doesn't make a lot of sense.
Not at all. I don't even think, I mean, maybe they grazed at the bottom of the top 10. Otherwise, I don't see why what they're doing way up there. All right, so anyway, now here's the rest of the top 10. USC at number 5, pretty good ranking because basically they really had a tough go against Oregon State, although they rose in the rankings in the BCS championship standings. That's kind of weird. TCU's up at number 6, Boise State 7th, Cincinnati 8th, LSU 9th, and Oregon at number 10. Good rankings all the way around. Oregon certainly deserves number 10. They've had a good year so far. Can't really argue with any of that. I think I like what the way that shakes out. I think it's pretty good, except for Iowa. The only one that I don't like is Iowa. Otherwise, pretty good. Now, Andrew has pointed out something very interesting in the rankings. Virginia Tech and Oklahoma State are 13th and 14th. Now, why is this significant exactly?
I was just pointing at that to try and throw you off, which it did. So, mission accomplished.
Good job, buddy. You did it at the very end.
No, I was pointing to Oklahoma State because we were talking earlier today via email about Oklahoma State and Texas, and you think that game has no potential.
Zero
this
potential.
Week.
None.
I disagree to a certain extent. I do think
that was a terrible loss that Okie State had earlier this season. I forget to guess who, but it was. I think it was something. I think it was A&M. I'll dig that up in a minute.
They had a loss against.
It was a bad loss. They had no defense at all in that game. Such a pathetic loss.
But I think that game has a little bit of potential.
That was Houston. Oh, you know what? Houston at the time it seemed like a terrible loss. We've come to find out that Houston's a ranked team. They're actually pretty good, so that really wasn't that bad of a loss after all.
I think the Texas-Oklahoma State game has a little bit of potential. Also, USC and am I hearing something? I think that's your computer.
I think it was here.
Please, I need quiet in the studio. Oh, you've got audio stuff going on.
All right,
on.
Getting enough Dave. Commercials. All right,
so
proceed.
I think the game's got potential. That's what I was pointing out. I was pointing out Oklahoma State where they're ranked because I think the Texas-Oklahoma State game. I would love to watch that game. Unfortunately, I will not be able to.
All you need
ABC
is a computer.
Decided,
all you need
you
is a computer.
You can't watch the ABC games on a computer.
Yes, are you sure?
No, you can't. You can't watch this
really?
On the 360. No,
you
I don't
tried
think
it?
So. I've never tried it, but I'm pretty sure.
You should try it. Maybe I think you can get those games.
I don't think you can get those games on the 360.
You want to bet a McChicken on this?
No, absolutely not.
You should bet a McChicken. Don't be like that.
I'm not going to bet anything about McChickens with you and a computer. I feel like I'm
at
a severe disadvantage when we talk about things you can and cannot do on a computer with Dave. I feel like if I think I could win that, but if Dave, if there's any possibility to find a way that Andrew could lose, he will make Andrew lose. He'll be like, I just saw it on Justin TV. That counts. McChickens. You know? So.
All right.
Yeah. I think that's going to be a good game. We're going to see it USC at Oregon, which is also.
That's going to be a great game.
Yeah, it's going to be a good game.
I still don't know why that's not the premier game. That should be the premier game. I mean, ABC is so afraid to put a Pac-10 game as the premier game when Honestly, it should be. And last week was the same case. Do you really think that any crap matchup between Texas and some crappy team, or I don't even know who it was last week, would be better than USC playing Oregon State? Really? You really think that's a better game? You really think that's a bigger matchup that'll draw more fans? I don't think so. I think USC has a much broader national appeal than Missouri does, and almost as much of a broader appeal as Texas does. So I don't understand.
Well,
that
that's
at all.
The thing. You can't compare USC to Missouri. You got to compare Missouri to Oregon State and USC to Texas. If you do that, it kind of does make sense that they didn't have the Oregon State.
But game everybody, up. Yeah, I think in a way you're right about that. But it's interesting to note that that game was a laugher from the first quarter. The USC game was very interesting. But again, it's never usually about that anyway when you schedule these games. So certainly I understand the ratings ploy there to schedule the more ratings bound, the more ratings potential game, the game with the more ratings potential. It's understandable there.
But here's my thing with it. And then we got to move on because this isn't what we were going to talk about this segment anyways. My thing is not which game they're showing nationally. I want them to split it. I don't care which game they show at what time, prime time, midday, whatever. I don't want both. Those are the really only two really good games on this weekend, and they put them on the exact same time on the exact same channel where I can't watch both of them. I only watch one, and even then I can't watch one. But anyways, split them up. Put one in the afternoon, put one at night. Makes a great
doubleheader.
We've
made this argument many times. I think there. I really do think there's some kind of contractual obligation to put those games at night. I really do. Otherwise, I don't want to see any real legitimate reason for it. Maybe because they want to put Notre Dame in that 12:30 slot. I think that's it, too.
I think Notre Dame's on NBC this week.
I'll check that to make sure. But either way, I'm sure there's like an Ohio State or some really lousy Big Ten team that apparently gets bigger ratings than USC. That's probably why they didn't put them in the 12:30 slot. That's my thinking.
All right, let's go into what we were talking about.
Well, geez, you're so impatient. So impatient. We're having good banter.
Hey, man,
We're having good banter.
I got laundry going on.
There's a 60-minute podcast and 15 more minutes to talk about.
And it's windy outside. I think power's going to go off any second.
Oh, come on. You care. You do laundry like every day. You've done laundry. Like, you come up, got to do laundry. Dude, like the laundry.
Dude, I got a girlfriend that I spend about half my time with. And when I'm not around her, the two things I'm doing is either one, being hanging out with you, or two, doing laundry. My life is not that exciting. I'm either with my girlfriend or with Dave or doing laundry. Those are the three options in my life.
All right. Well, let's get to the subject at hand. Is it the end of the line for the SEC's top two? Florida and Alabama are both the two best teams in the country according to the rankings. But both teams have had some real scares of late in the last 2 weeks. And we know that Florida's had a really, really tough time putting anybody away. Remember that game against Arkansas 2 weeks ago. And even the game against Mississippi State, they won 29-19. But that was kind of iffy for a while there. They're having a really tough time scoring points. Meanwhile, with Alabama, it was a blocked field goal that made them win by the skin of their teeth against Tennessee at home. Oh, my goodness. Could both of these teams be headed for a loss before they meet in the SEC championship?
I don't know if both are. I think that
I do.
We certainly do think, at least I think that there's a potential for one. Let's look at the left of the game. Alabama's off this week. They play LSU in 2 weeks, November 7th, I believe.
Yep.
So that's going to be a test. After that, they have Mississippi State. Chattanooga.
Terrible.
I don't know how you get that game scheduled in November. And then at Auburn. Auburn's good. So there's certainly some potential there for maybe an upset on the road at Auburn. But really, LSU is their last big test. Tennessee, you know, tough game. That was interesting. I was watching that game, and it was like 12-3 with like 5 minutes left or something. And I felt like, okay, Alabama's got this one in the tank. It's all done. Turned it off. Next thing you know, I look later, like online, and it's like Alabama escapes, and I'm like, what the heck? So that's just one of those moments where you turn a football game off a little bit early and could have missed what would have been the story of the day or one of certainly the stories of the year in college football. So I got to watch myself for that in the future. But I think Alabama, the LSU game is going to be interesting. It is at home for them. LSU is very limited offensively, but Alabama's struggled in the red zone. They've got to get some better quarterback play here down the stretch. The defense obviously is very good, but we'll see. I do think Alabama can navigate that schedule. You got LSU. You got a tough game at Auburn. The other two should be W's, unless they throw out a huge choke job. So I think Alabama's good potential to be undefeated going into the SEC championship game. Florida.
All right. Florida is going to be really interesting. Is going to be a little tougher for them because they played Georgia. Now, we know that Georgia is overrated. We know they've never really been that good, honestly. But Georgia will be a competitive, I think, in this game. Then after that, a night game against Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt's not meat, but they're not great either. South Carolina is interesting because somehow anytime you have these games in the SEC at South Carolina, and you know the old ball coach, former coach of Florida, Steve Spurrier. Goodness, I can't believe I forgot that. And then two really, really pathetic games to end the season. Florida International, good Lord. Are you kidding me? Scheduling that game and Florida State. But I feel like, and this could be me going out on a limb, I think both teams get a loss. Dead serious. Both teams are going to lose a game before they meet in the SEC championship.
Want to bet a McChicken on it?
I will bet you one McChicken and a half.
Two.
Oh, no.
Two.
No. See, you
two.
Did that to me.
Two.
I did that.
There's two teams. You can't do two McChickens?
I did this for you. I said this. I had this thing with the McChickens. I think it was when the Yankees were going to win such and such game. And then you said, we'll bet you five McChickens. And I said something like 10. And then, yeah, you refused. And so, all right, let's do two because I'm a sporting guy. I'm a very generous guy. We'll do two.
That they both
let's
have to
play
lose.
Two. Let's play two.
They both have.
They're both
to lose.
Gonna lose.
Okay.
Now
I think one could possibly lose. Again, Florida, South Carolina, Georgia this weekend to an extent, but
both gonna lose.
I think Florida can do that one. Florida State at the end of the year. Florida hasn't been the same since the Tebow thing when he hit his head in that one game against Kentucky. His numbers, I don't think Tebow's right yet. The defense is still very good.
Yeah.
But I really don't think Tebow's right. We're not seeing a powerful offensive Florida football team this year. They're fairly pedestrian in a lot of ways. And could that come back and bite them? Maybe. It's the defense is going to be a big thing to determine how they go from here on out.
Yeah, it's
and some of these games, the South Carolina game in particular could be a very low-scoring game. And games like that, they can go either way, one play here or there in the football game.
Certainly, absolutely. I mean, we've seen this time and time again in the SEC where, you'll have teams, because the conference is so tough, the conference is so defensive-minded, the conference isn't very well-traveled, I'll give you that much.
But, I mean,
but still, it's very good.
But you look at the schedule. Both teams will be favored in all the games.
Yeah.
And realistically, for each team, you could pinpoint one game that might be really tough.
Yep.
For Alabama, it's LSU.
Yep.
For Florida, it's going to be South Carolina.
Yep.
And then you can pick one other game there that maybe not the easiest game in the world. For Florida, maybe Georgia. Maybe Florida State. Probably not. Maybe Georgia this weekend might give a little bit of trouble. And then, of course, for Alabama, it might be that Auburn game towards the end of the year. But, outside of that, both these teams are going to be favored in every game they play.
Yeah.
And I'm going to eat both those McChickens on the SEC championship game.
Oh, man. And then the week after, you'll be eating your five.
I'll eat my Colts McChickens.
What happened to that? What happened?
Colts, by the way, will be 7-0 this weekend after they beat the 49ers.
It's like they knew that I was betting these things. The Miami game killed me. The Miami game, above all the others, killed me. Can you believe that they were up by 21 points at the half? Practically at the half. They did give up a touchdown late, but good Lord. How do you. That one time I could have gotten it. It's like, I just can't believe it.
Poor Dave.
Am I just what? I mean, I don't even know why I bet.
You should
this
do locks of the week on your podcast. Why don't you do that on the podcast too? Email and podcast version.
I would say locks of the week in the podcast is an idea. I probably should because
it's a good idea. Isn't it locks of the week radio? How can you have a locks of the week radio with no locks of the week?
Well, in the past, the idea was that it hosted the show, but it doesn't really anymore. It's just kind of, I kind of use it for the name now. Kind of like how some companies, you know, like, they don't really.
What happened to that website, by the way?
Well, I don't have time to write these things anymore. I'd write all the stuff I could be writing, and I said say it on the podcast. So that's kind of like what I've been doing.
You do your Locks of the Week email every week. You post that online. Booyah.
Yeah, I could just write them over again and then just have the first five.
You have to write it over again. Copy paste.
Copy paste. It takes a little digging.
Come on, computer guy.
We could do that.
There's shortcuts to these things.
Yeah, there's definitely a way to make that work. So anyway, Andrew, pleasure. Good having you here again.
Is that it? We're wrapping up the show?
Yep.
I feel like we only talked about two things.
Well, the YouTube concert cut into a lot of the YouTube podcast time.
Well, you asked.
I was interested to know, though. It was a good discussion. And so, anyway, thanks again. And hopefully you can tell me about another YouTube concert down the road.
Next June,
huh?
I'll be on the podcast again. We'll be talking about YouTube.
Wow.
If I go to the thing. I probably will go. Why not, right?
Why not? If you like YouTube.
By the way, they're going to have it in June. I was thinking about this today. That's right in the middle of baseball season. They're going to have to schedule an Angels road trip around that because it's going to be at Angel Stadium. And then.
Oh, wait. It's going to be at Angel Stadium? It's not going to be at the pond?
No, it's going to be at Angel Stadium.
Wow.
And then you're going to have. I mean, what's that field going to look like after everybody goes out there? Because they're going to have people standing all over that field.
It's not going to be that big a deal. I mean, come on.
Really?
Nah, I don't think so. That's why they're going to be on the road trip for like a week. I mean, it'll be no big deal.
No
problem.
I don't know.
That'll be our subject for the June 12, 2010 podcast. What do the field conditions look like after concerts? We'll get into that later.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, have a wonderful day, everybody. It's been great hearing you on this podcast. Do tune in again. I'm Dave Medina for Andrew Jacobson here in the city. Have a wonderful one. We'll see you next time.